Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction novel that I read as I read it. No set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a novel, I do the review and stick it up here in the podcast feed. Now, hopefully people enjoyed the last podcast. Well, actually, the last two podcasts that I did, number 78 and 79, I did with Jesse from the SFF audio podcast. And I got a few good emails about that. But if you enjoyed that, me doing a review and a discussion about science fiction themes and science fiction ideas, of course, that was mainly about Invisible Men with the novels that we talked about there and the other fiction that we talked about, the science fiction that we talked about. If you enjoyed that, send me an email, because I want to know, because the idea is that I guess the Sofanauts podcast is no more. I'm not quite sure how many listeners that got, probably around about the same amount as this got, but that was really interesting. There was always lots of debate and talking about different science fiction and things like that. So what I'm thinking of is bringing on similar guests in the future. Sometimes, you know, not every week, or maybe once a month, is bring on a guest reviewer and help me review a novel that we've both read recently and talk about, you know, not just about the novel, but also about some ideas about science fiction and larger themes. So if you've got anyone in mind that you'd like to see that, send some emails to luke@juggler.net. That's the way to get a hold of me if you like that idea. If you don't like that idea, you think, hey, it should just be you, Luke, just you doing your reviews with nobody else's schedule, nobody else's opinion is just yours. I mean, send me emails like that as well if you want. I'm currently down here. Other bits of news here. Currently in South America, again in the south end of Chile, in Punta Arenas. And if you want to find out more about my travelling and my stories and my photography and all that kind of stuff, you can follow along on my blog, which is lukeburridge.com/blog. The other thing, because a great way to get a whole year's worth of my travelling and juggling into 1 4-minute fix is check this out. Go to YouTube and look up International Juggler 2009, and you'll find my big video project. I've been talking about it pretty much for the last year, I guess, on this podcast, and now it's finally up there online to see it. And, you know, it's only got a few thousand views so far. So, and I know this podcast normally gets around about 1,000 views. So what you should do, actually, I'll put it in the show notes to this episode as well. So you can either go to my blog and find it there, or just look directly on YouTube, or look at sfbrp.com and episode 80, and I'll put it up there as well in the show notes here. It's literally just a video of me juggling in all the different countries that I visited in 2009, or most of the different countries I visited in 2009. And yeah, and that's it. About 45 different countries and territories. It's quite interesting, and I had a lot of fun making it. And so really check it out. You'll have a lot of fun with that. Moving on to today's novel is that I read it pretty much in the past 24 hours. I started it when I got on a plane yesterday evening. So actually a bit more than 24 hours ago I started it. And when I got on my plane in Berlin, and I was flying first of all to Spain, to Madrid, and then across to Santiago in Chile, and then down here to Punta Arenas. And in that time I thought, well, I've got to get a book to read. And I had some books at home. There's quite a few books now that I'm part of the way through and haven't finished. But I decided to do this entire trip paperless. So I've got plenty of books on my iPod and my iPhone to read, and also not just as text files on the Stanza ebook reader, but I decided to sign up with an Audible account as well. So I've got two novels sitting there as well that I'd like to read. One of them is a novel that I've read before, you know, just to make sure I can really get into this sort of audiobook kind of thing, because I've never really been able to get into it before, but I thought, well, I'm just going to give it a go, see how it goes this time out. So I've got Revelation Space, which I already started listening to. I've read it before, so that's good. And the other one, that the novel that I decided to download, was one that I couldn't find in a local bookshop, and then thought, hey, I just really want to read it, because I've heard so many good things about it. And that is The Wind-Up Girl by, actually, let me flick across here to iTunes and make sure I've got the name here. It's The Wind-Up Girl by Paolo Bagagalupi. Bagagalupi, I think is his name. Anyway, so I've got that book as well as an audiobook. I'll be listening to them over this coming trip and reviewing them as I go along. But anyway, back on the Sofanauts podcast a few weeks ago, or, you know, it wasn't a few weeks ago because it's not been running for a few weeks. A few months ago, there was an author called Peter Watts. And Peter was talking about his one of his novels called Blindsight, and I thought, well, he said it was free to download, so I thought, well, I'll give it a go. So it was published in 2006, and it's around about pages long, probably around about 300 or 400 pages long. I don't know how many it is really, because I was reading it on my iPod Touch. So it's I'll just set it up straight away. The world is it's something like the late 21st century. And technology has obviously moved on quite a long way, and not a lot of technology is talked about, except for the spaceships that I'll get into later. Not a lot of the technology on the Earth is talked about too much. It's mostly about the augmentation of human capabilities in their brains, and by putting computers in their brains and linking up with computers and that kind of thing, and the artificial intelligences that go along with it. So one thing that's happened is you got this place called Heaven where you're pretty much uploading your brain. Well, you're not actually uploading your brain into a computer, but you're linking your brain with a computer and then shutting down your body and living in a place called Heaven, which is like a constructed reality which only you take part in. And of course, you can still communicate with other people. You can communicate with other people in their own versions of Heaven and things like that. So that's one part as well. Again, there's the augmented brain. So you actually take out functions of your brain and replace them with computer links and with things like that, which is what quite a few people do. You also get these people who have studied the brain so much, they're sort of brain tweakers, like psychologists kind of thing, and they can actually change people's memories and stuff by manipulating them in some ways, in like non-intrusive ways, as well as intrusive ways as well. And also, finally, you've got this whole different kind of, like a whole different species of humans which has been brought back. They have vampires. Vampires actually exist in this book, but they're actually, the story that we have of vampires now, or the ideas that we have about vampires now, is pretty much set up to be some kind of ancestral memory of another race, another like hominid race, which was around with humans, like around at the same time as the Neanderthals and things like that. And they're a humanoid species, a close relative of humans, who had spiky teeth and fed on humans and drank blood and all that kind of stuff, and was nocturnal and hibernated long times and was afraid of crosses, right angles and things like that. And so you've got all these different things going on in the book, but a lot of that is, of course, a lot of that is like foundational for the themes. Of course, I'll get onto them a lot more later on in it, but you've got this quite vibrant world and of different, you know, layers going on. And we read about a lot about this kind of stuff in the backstory segments of the novel. The plot, or the setup for the plot, goes a bit like this. Sometime, again, in the future, late 21st century, all these things drop out of the sky and go flash. And everyone's going, what was that? And there's like 20,000 of these satellites that have dropped down, alien satellites or alien imaging devices, which have dropped down into the atmosphere of the of Earth and taken our photo, and just or something like that. Nobody's actually quite sure what's going on, but it's obviously something alien, and it wasn't anything harmful. It wasn't an act of war or violence or anything like that, or aggression. It's just this thing went off and everyone's going, what's going on here? And they look out around the solar system and they find this spaceship incoming, and so they send things out to go out to that, and that turns out not to be the main thing. That's more of a decoy. But actually what happens is they find out in the about one was it no half a light year away, out in the Oort cloud or whatever that section of the solar system is, out with like in interstellar space, they find this, not like, it's not like a brown dwarf, it's like a Jupiter-sized planet, but like 10 times the mass of Jupiter, which doesn't mean it's 10 times the size of Jupiter, I don't think, but it's very big and it's very cold out there, but it's got a lot of course, X-rays coming out of it, but it's so dim that you can't really see it from Earth until they turn all of the satellites and all of the telescopes and anything that you can look at anything with in the Earth system and in the solar system itself. We all look in the same direction and they find this big like gas giant floating out there, and they call it Big Ben. And what actually happened is that, you know, they set out this this spaceship with a crew of 5 people on board, a few extras of people in hibernation as well. Actually, they're all in hibernation, they're all in cold sleep, and they're heading out to the first alien spacecraft that they saw, which turned out to be the decoy. But on the way there, the decoy turns out not to be worth going to, so they head off to Big Ben because they work out that's where the aliens are actually based. And of course, when they get there, it turns into a classical kind of first contact story in the same way as, well, a lot of these kind of things, you know, like Rendezvous with Rama and all that kind of stuff, where you find an alien spaceship and you're not even quite sure where the aliens are on the spaceship, or what they want, or how they think, or who they are. And, you know, of course, it's a story that I've read many times before, but here it's done very well indeed, and I actually really enjoyed that kind of setup. But like I said, that's not all that's going on, is you get this small cast of people investigating the aliens and the alien psyche, and of course their own psyche, and what it's like to be human faced with an inhuman alien coming towards as well. But there's other stuff going on. There's lots of flashbacks. There's like three or four distinct kind of stories being told in flashback by the main character, and the main character is called Siri. I can't remember his second name, but it's Siri something, and he's got this bit of a problem. When he was younger, he had really bad epilepsy, and so what they did is cut out half his brain, and he only has half a brain left, but he doesn't have any empathy. I guess, like, the half of his brain which had, like, the emotional connection and, like, the imagination to imagine other people, yourself in other people's shoes, to experience empathy, that's not there at all. So Siri has had to learn how to interact with other people, and he's got all these different things going on in his brain which he doesn't understand what's going on in his brain, but it's happening there, but he's having to model his behavior and going on like that. So it's very strange to have a main character with half a brain, and of course you read about his interaction with the people on board the spaceship that he's with, and him thinking about stuff, and he's an observer. That's his official title. He's the observer, and I'll talk about a little bit more about that in a minute. But his backstory that we also find out about is the story with him and his mother. His mother goes into the into heaven. And so, of course, he has to, you know, deal with that kind of stuff. We find about his father as well. His father is obviously some kind of political operative, secret service agent. Never actually quite sure what his father does for a living, but he's away from home a lot of the time and is deeply connected with all kinds of different things as well. There's a story with his friend, and his friend is, again, I can't remember what his friend's name is. His name was Pag, I think his name was. And again, Pag has been also training and augmenting his brain and stuff like that. So you get that father, that story. But one of the main stories is his experience with one of his girlfriends, that his friend introduces him to. And his girlfriend is one of these people who wants to tweak his brain. And of course, he sees that whole relationship as some kind of battle between the sexes and battle between evolutionary imperatives and things like that going on. And it's quite strange that we're actually reading this whole story from the point of view with someone who doesn't have empathy. And he's like, he writes a story to his girlfriend and tells the story, and of course it doesn't go down well. He's like, well, I don't understand why it didn't go down very well. But then at the same time, his job is he's like called a jargoneer or observer, and his main job is to communicate, or is to look at people who are way advanced, who've got loads of different augmentation in the brain, and almost a different species. They have different patterns, you know, patterns going on in the brain, and different behaviors and different ways of talking. And he, even without understanding it consciously, he interprets that so baseline humans and other people and other computers and other augmented humans as well, they can all understand each other. So what he's meant to be doing on this first contact mission out to this gas giant called Big Ben, is his job is to communicate back to Earth and to tell everyone else what's going on. And not just, I mean, they could have done that just with the computer records, but it's very important that it has to be told from the point of view someone who can answer questions and who can consciously understand what's going on, who can reason and argue the side or argue what decisions were made. Because, of course, they're like 8 months away, or like 8 light months away from Earth, so they can't just talk backwards and forwards very easily at all. It takes, you know, they have to all be there working as a group, a slick machine which is all working very well together and can cope with anything going on at all. Now, of course, you may be thinking, well, why do they send all these humans 8 light months away? Why don't they just send an artificial intelligence. And that's one of the things that is talked about quite a lot, is that it's never really explained completely, but artificial intelligences still aren't working, because it doesn't matter how intelligent they get or how complex they get, they don't seem to be able to connect with humans at all. Or, you know, you can't just run a human like consciousness inside a computer. And that's why when people get uploaded into heaven, they don't get uploaded, they run heaven in their own brains rather than move the processing in their brains into the cloud. So that's quite strange, really. So you have to have sentient, conscious humans or beings, at least, on the ship. And which brings us on to the characters, because you've got this, like I say, quite a small cast. But each one of the cast has a very distinctive twist on their human, baseline human. For a start, you get Siri, who's got this half a brain, and he's trying to keep track of what everyone's doing, what everyone's thinking, and why they're doing this kind of stuff. And his whole thing is that he's just there to observe. He's not meant to put himself into any situation. And often he'll understand what's going on before other people, or, you know, he's our first person narrator. So he says he understands or did understand what was going on before these other people or these other beings that he's with, but he let them work out what's going on for themselves. Which it sometimes works out and sometimes isn't the best thing to be doing, but that's what happens anyway. One very interesting character is actually four characters in one. It's called The Gang. And you get this one person, this one woman called Susan. And unlike Siri, who's got half a brain, she's got a whole brain, but four personalities are running there at the same time. And the idea is that you get these schizophrenic kind of things that happen where you get one personality running and then another one taking over and then another one coming back in again, and that's always called a disorder. And now it's not called a disorder, it's called a complex, because that's now something that you can recreate with modern medicine. So what she's done is split her brain into four different characters. You've got Susan, you've got Michelle, you've got Sasha, and then you've got a male part of her personality called Cruncher, which doesn't have very much of a human personality. But Cruncher, he or it just sits there and crunches numbers and goes through iterations and works out interference patterns. It's sort of like this idiot savant kind of thing going on there. And the other ones are all linguists. That's what they're to do, is to communicate with the aliens. You've also got a vampire, and a vampire is massively intelligent. And I can't remember the name of the optical illusion, but it's the one where you've got like this sphere. No, not a sphere. You've got a cube, and the cube is interlinked with each other. And sometimes one face looks like it's in front, and sometimes another face looks like it's in front. The idea of the vampire is that they see the world in fundamentally different way than humans, and they can see both sides of the cube in front at the same time. And, you know, humans can't do that at all with most optical illusions, but the vampire can. And the vampire is pretty good as well, because he's obviously a predator to the humans, and they're always afraid of him, but he's the leader. He's he gives the orders, and he's connected in with the ship. And the ship is, and between the ship and the vampire is like a construct called the captain. And so he's connected in, the vampire, which is an inhuman character anyway, is connected in with the ship. And also it says, you know, you've got some of these little quirks as well, like the vampire never talks in past tense. You know, they just say that, oh, vampires never talk in past tense. Oh, why not? Well, they always live in the present. They never live in the past. They don't see things in that way. And you're like, oh, that's so strange. Which is a bit strange, because it's just sort of like a little bit of a quirk. And that's another thing that I thought was a bit strange about the vampire. There's a lot of it in there, you know, the evolutionary history and how they managed to get the genes of vampires back out of the population and things like that, which is quite good. But then there was this one weakness, which was that vampires are afraid of crosses, afraid of, you know, 90 degree angles. And I was just like, well, that doesn't really make a lot of sense. And that was never explained. So there's a lot of things actually in the novel which aren't explained, but that seemed a little bit too much playing into the stereotype of the vampire. It's sort of like, Peter Watts says, I want to have a vampire in space, but it's got to be a real vampire. It's got to, you know, conform to all of the vampire archetypes, and of course it has to be afraid of a cross, whereas I think you can do something new with vampires. That's the whole point of vampires and modern monsters in this way, is that you can always reinvent them and make them your own. And he did so much reinvention that I didn't really think that being afraid of right angles was very good. Anyway, you get like another person who has a strange quirk, and that's Cunningham, who is a doctor. He pops up halfway through the story, and he's so heavily augmented that he doesn't really feel like a human. He doesn't feel whole unless he's connected with his instruments, and he sort of lives in his instruments and through his instruments and things like that, which is another interesting thing. And Siri, our main protagonist, who's meant to understand people, he doesn't even understand them consciously, but he can read their topology, he can read their facial expressions and the way that they hold their body. And because Cunningham is so wound up and tied in with his identity into his medical instruments, he's very hard to read, although Siri does manage to get a hang of him later on. And of course Cunningham never uses he only uses it and its, so he doesn't see other humans as people in a way. He sees them as objects. And you got another two characters. One that I talk about is Bates, and she is the main military personnel, and she's got this very interesting story, and I actually quite liked her introduction in one of the little backstory bits that we get there, sort of like, oh yes, Bates was this person, and she did this and this. And of course, because of that, I could sort of see her twist, or not even her twist, but I could sort of see her play into the themes of the novels from quite a long way out, and I like that. You know, it makes me feel it makes me feel intelligent when I can see these little twists or these little things that are going to play in later on. But also it's very good writing, I think, with this interesting characters. Now I say a small cast of characters, you know, you got the girlfriend and the mother and father, but these are the ones that we're dealing with a lot of the time. And it's very strange because none of them, as I said, are really human. They've all got these different things going on. You know, they've all got these different facets to their personalities which make them inhuman. And Siri as well, our protagonist, our, you know, viewpoint character, our first person narrator, get none of them really human. Yet I sort of could, in some ways I could identify with them, and in other ways I couldn't identify with them. But I think that's a real bold step by any author, is to just go, okay, I'm going to lead you on this journey with no human characters, and the main character doesn't feel empathy, and yet we're going to actually have to try and care about these characters. And in a way I didn't really care about the characters, but then I can only imagine that was intentional, because that's what the novel is about. It's about humanity and, of course, consciousness and intelligence and the way that these all play together. And the only way that you can really talk about these themes in depth is to have these different characters that you can play off in different ways. It's like trying to do a romantic comedy, but going, okay, well, I'm going to do a romantic comedy. But, you know, so if you're going to do a romantic comedy, you have to have the romantic comedy characters in there. And in this way, if you're going to have a discussion on humanity, you've got to have the human characters in there. And yet he does it now when you're like, well, they're not really any human characters. I guess his girlfriend and his father maybe are the most human characters in there, but then I didn't really care that much about them either, which was a bit strange. So the character studies are very interesting, and I did enjoy spending time with these characters just because they were so inhuman, and the way that they worked together and the revelations that they had, and the way that you could see that each one of them was thinking. And yet at the same time, there was this massive gap between me as the reader, and then a gap between me and Siri, the main character, and then this massive gap between him and the other characters. And yet somehow I felt connected to all these like vast chasms of inhumanity between me and the characters. Which brings me on to, of course, the aliens themselves. And I don't really want to get into it. These aliens were very, very alien, and I don't want to give too much away. But again, it plays in perfectly with the themes of the novel, because that's pretty much what it is. It's like he had these ideas of the themes that he wanted to talk about, you know, like the exploration of consciousness. And even one of the most amazing ideas that was in the book, it's like consciousness, it's like, is it really a good thing? Should we really be sentient as consciousness? Or is it just a waste of resources? You know, some of the most successful animals on Earth aren't conscious. They're not self-aware. But they get on fine, so is self-awareness overrated? And, you know, it's that kind of question that you can put in there. And it's actually quite clever. At one point he says, oh, not even a lot of philosophers talked about consciousness and self-awareness, but there wasn't many who even asked You know, was it worth it at all? You know, is it a good thing? He says, you know, Dawkins did it, and then some obscure science fiction novelist also thought about that. I'm thinking, yeah, he's talking about himself here. This is not a question that's thought about very much in any kind of circles, I don't think. I guess, you know, taking this book at its word, it's not the kind of thing that people think about. You know, is consciousness a good thing? Is that, you know, maybe in the future we'll grow out of our consciousness? And there's a lot of this kind of ideas going on here, with, you know, talking about the aliens, as well as the humans on board. And, you know, there's lots of plays and lots of different ways he talks about this and approaches it. And that is what it is. You know, I've pretty much gone into the main theme. You know, it is just the exploration of consciousness. And I really like it. I thought it was very interesting. There is lots of science and technology in the book as well. Like I said, most of it is when you're talking about how humans interact with other humans and how humans become non-human as well. Of course, you do have spaceships, but the technology of the spaceships weren't, well, you know, wasn't talked about in the same depth as, say, the evolutionary ideas and things going on in the humans themselves and that kind of thing. But, you know, you do get like the spaceships, and the alien spaceship is quite interesting as well. And you know, you get your fabricator on board the spaceship. Now, often these sort of like post-scarcity, singularity novels. I'm not quite sure this is a post-singularity novel, but, you know, you've got that kind of stuff going on there. You've got the fabricator that they can make anything that they want whenever they want. Now, normally this kills stories, but here it works really well in this story. And also you've got, like, interstellar space travel, and often that kills the stories, but here again it works really well. And, you know, it's quite a good balance. Now, there is a lot of jargon, and that'll take me onto the writing in a minute. You know, there's lots of times when they just said, oh, and they've got this thingy array, and they've got this antimatter whatsamajoodlybop, and they've got this and that and this and that. And a lot of it is just a bit strange. But then again, he does actually say at one point, because Siri is a person who's this observer who's meant to interpret between, like, really advanced humans. He actually says, and I can't remember the exact words that he used, but he says of the characters of this exchange that these other human or post-human characters are talking to each other, he actually says something like, he goes, those, of course, aren't the exact words that they use, because who, advanced as they are, who of these people would want to be constrained by a single language or even a single conceptual framework? And it actually really shows you just how advanced these characters are, where you're getting the easy end of the jargonologists, because I think that was his title. You're getting his end of these conversations. So he's not actually saying what they were saying to each other. He's saying what they meant to each other. And so much of what we're reading in the book, not just among the interactions between the humans, you're actually getting a whole lot more of that just between, like, in the interactions between the aliens. And say, for example, when the humans go and land on the alien spaceship, you don't get a whole lot of detail. It's sort of like, he's talking about this and what it's like to feel like it, and then of course something goes in the brain and he's thinking this and he doesn't see this, and that happens as well. And again, he's not really saying what did happen, he's saying what we would understand would happen. And that really puts another huge spin on the whole kind of conceptual setup of this science fiction novel, where when I'm reading it, and he even admits it, like in the closing passages of the book, he's like, yeah, and I also, after I've said all of this, I'm probably an unreliable narrator as well. So we're getting this first person narration, which is like this filtered through the subconscious mind of someone who doesn't feel empathy. And of course he learns to feel some empathy later on, and he does find some humanity on him, but that's his sort of like main story arc there as the main character. And yet we get all of this science fiction, like really hard science fiction, filtered through that. So of course there is a lot of jargon, but if you just let it wash over you in the same spirit that Siri lets things wash over him. And you do get these really quite strange, difficult turns of phrases. And if I went back and like read them, I'd go, well, I don't actually understand what some of these words mean. And this concept, I probably don't understand what that concept means. But in the same way that Siri understands things subconsciously, if you just take it as a whole, you can really understand subconsciously what's going on and grasp it subconsciously. Which brings me, of course, onto another main theme of the book, and that is, of course, the title of it, Blindsight, which is the idea that if you you know, I can't really, was it proprioception, I think, where you can understand, you can feel where your body is at any time. And also this whole thing where if you can, you can actually turn off people's senses, but they, their subconscious mind still sees it. This is what happens, of course, when people have like a... not a lobotomy. Where do you get it? Where you get, you get the connection with epileptics, get this, where they get the connection between two halves of the brain are disconnected. And one side of the brain, like the left side of the brain, which is getting input from the right eye, can see what's going on in the right side of their body. And the left side of the, no, the right hand side of the brain, which is getting input from the left side of the brain, left eye, can see what's going on the left hand side. But they don't know what each other are thinking. And there's this whole, like the whole other section, a whole other conceptual idea, the whole lot of theme of the book where you've got these two, like, think people knowing what's going on subconsciously, but their conscious brain doesn't know about it. They literally can't see what's going on, and yet their brain stem can get them out of a situation. And it's one of those times where if you just think about this and actually apply this kind of thing to the book that you're reading, it doesn't matter how advanced it is, you're just like, okay, I'll understand what's going on. And I actually found that's what I did do. And then later on in the book, when he was actually explaining, oh, and this is actually what was going on here, and this is what this, you know, where you get to the end of the book and he's filling in all the gaps and, you know, explaining the twists and explaining this and that, I'm like, well, I already knew that subconsciously, I already understood what was going on there, and even not subconsciously, and I realized that these clues that were being put there, you can actually understand. So the whole point of the book, or one whole side of the book, the title of the book itself, Blindsight, can actually be applied to reading science fiction. Like, it's that whole thing where you get the twist at the end of the book and it's obvious and it's inevitable and it surprised you, but of course it didn't really surprise you because you realize, like, the second before you read it on the page what was going to be said there, and then you read it and you're like, yes, I knew it. And even if you knew it just before, you didn't only know it before, you actually knew it as you were reading it, and it was only when you get on later on. And of course that kind of thing happens to the characters in the book, and yet you get it as one of the readers of the book as well, and I think that's quite clever. Now, it might be unintentional by Peter Watts. Maybe he didn't intend for all of this, all these different things that I'm getting out of the book to become, you know, to get out of that, or he didn't intend, or he didn't write this in, but then you can read it into it anyway, which is great, you know. If that, if it was an accident, it's an unlucky accident, it made me enjoy the book a lot more. But I'd like to think that this is one of the main themes that he's blatantly talked about, that he could actually bring this in and write it as well, which is very good. You know, the writing is very good. The good thing is about this book, as I say, lots of science, lots of jargon, but you get lots of breaks as well. And he makes no excuses for the diversions. He goes, right, and now I'm going to go and talk about this, and it's like a mini essay about this, or about the history of this, or that bit of science, or that bit of philosophy, or this little bit of backstory, and then this bit of backstory. And because it's told from the point of view of someone whose job it is to look at the whole and to be able to communicate it in a better way, you actually, and of course he explains this even throughout the book, is like, I'm not telling this as an A, B, C, D, E, F story. I'm telling you this in a way that you, a lesser human than the characters, and a lesser a person with lesser experiences and smaller frames of references that the characters in this book have, and the experiences that are going through, are so wild and so unimaginable. But this book is then the only way for me, Siri, the main character, is to be able to put it across for you baseline humans to understand. And I just went with it. And I thought it was great. It was great to... a great way to write a novel. I mean, it's very clever. I mean, I have some ideas of ways that I'd like to write future novels, and I've got these quite weird kind of postmodern ideas of you know, structure and ways of telling stories as well. But this works really well, and it isn't anything remarkable, but it fits so well with the themes and the ideas. And it's sort of, like I say, it comes back to he's created a whole, he's created a unified you know, idea here of what a novel can be. And it doesn't have to be a normal story, and it doesn't have to have normal characters in. And the writing can, you know, be very well advanced. And it might, you might, again, have to sit here with a notepad and pen just to keep track of everything like that. And some of the characters might be so obscure and only come up once and twice, and then you've just got it. You've always got to latch onto it. You can't understand, or maybe you can't understand what's going on if, like, you know, let me put it this way. I read this in a single sitting. Well, not in a single sitting. Of course, I read a bit last night, and I read the rest today in a single journey. But I didn't consume any other media. I didn't read anything else. I didn't listen to any podcast. I didn't listen to any music. Well, I was listening to music as well, but I didn't really do anything except walk through airports, sit down, read this book, sit on a plane and do that. You know, and maybe if I was having to concentrate on other things, I wouldn't be able to hold the entirety of the novel in my brain at once, which you can do if you just sit down and read a book from beginning to end. Maybe if I didn't do that, maybe if you just sit down and read like a chapter and then read another chapter and then 2 days later read another chapter, you probably wouldn't be able to get as much out of it. But like I say, as an entire whole of a story which is conceptually broad, yet, you know, plot and character not too broad, you can actually hold it all, like I say, hold it all in your head and get a lot more out of it than that. But as well as that, you know, it is quite tricky to read. You know, it's probably quite hard to read for a lot of people. You know, you've got to really dedicate yourself, you know, really commit to it, maybe put it that way. There is actually quite a lot of humor in it. Now, not too blatant humor, and no jokes that immediately like stand out, jump out at me, and you know, nothing that makes me go, oh, ha ha ha, I remember that joke and that was really funny. But it's there, and it's good that it's there, because you sometimes need a bit of a break from the dialogue and the exposition and the and all these other things as well. Anyway, I think I've pretty much gone over it there. Normally I finish off with the themes, but I think I've talked enough about the themes as I've gone through this novel. In conclusion, as you can probably tell, I got a lot out of this novel. It is hard science fiction. It does make you think, and it, you know, it does explore areas which other fiction, which I've not really read very much in other science fiction. But yet at the same time, it does retread ground, like the whole First Contact thing. Maybe a little bit too much, you know, the whole thing about, you know, the not quite sure what's going on with the aliens. Are the aliens, you know, do they think like this? Don't they think like this? It does seem to, well, maybe it's a homage to other novels, but it does bring enough extra stuff into it as well. But like, plot wise, you know, it's nothing new, and character wise, you know, the characters aren't that interesting in a way. You know, when somebody dies, I'm like, okay, somebody died, you know, I don't really care too much about them, but they're interesting. But again, there's a whole empathy gap there as well, which is strange too. But I really did enjoy it as a whole. I don't have a lot to complain about. The writing's really good, so I'm gonna give it 4 stars. It is I'd say the best book I've read this year, but you know, it's like the second book that I've read this, or third book I've read this year. So, but it is doing very well. It's doing very well. It's the author, Peter Watts, did very well here, and I will probably check out more work by him, because I know he's got some more novels out there, so I'll definitely look out for more Peter Watts material. Also, I did read a few weeks ago that Peter Watts had a bit of trouble getting through, I know this is just a personal thing about the author, he had a bit of trouble getting across the border, I think from America into Canada, and he was beaten up by the border patrol there as well, and he's got medical bills and court fees and all these other kinds of stuff, bills for his solicitors and things. So check out his website, read up about his story there, and if you feel like donating some money towards Peter Watts to help out a science fiction author who puts his work out there for free, you know, you can download this for free. I read it on my iPod Touch, and so check out the novel, check out his website, see what's going on there, and also just check out the book. Like I say, Blindsight, it's a good book. It was nominated for a Hugo. I just read on the Wikipedia page about it, and it's, I think it's well worth its nomination there. It's a very good novel. Check it out. My next novel that I'm going to read is going to be an audiobook, Revelation Space by Alistair Reynolds. I have read it before, and actually as I started listening to it, I'm thinking, not only do I remember the opening lines of the novel, but I remember, and that I read it before, I actually remember remembering them before. So I think I've actually probably read Revelation Space twice before, and this will be my third go at it, third read of it. But maybe the second time that I read it, I picked it up off the bookshelf and started reading it, and then thought, I've read this before, and put it down. So maybe I'm only remembering the first line of it, because I did that as well with another one of his books in the Revelation Space universe. I picked up Redemption Arc and started reading it, didn't recognize it from the prologue, and then the opening chapter I read it and I was like 2 paragraphs into it, and I was thinking, I've read this before, you know. And it often happens like that, especially actually with Alistair Reynolds, because all the covers of his books, of his Revelation Space novels, they're all pretty much the same, with a planet and a spaceship in front of it. You know, that sounds quite obvious for a science fiction novel, but it's a very distinctive crescent of a planet, black cover, one single small spaceship seen side on the front, you know. So that's the kind of cover he has of his novels, which means I can never remember if I've read it or not, whereas I definitely have read this one before. Anyway, check out Revelation Space, and I'll be doing my review of that next. Also, email me, luke@juggler.net, if you've got any feedback, if you enjoyed this podcast or enjoyed the previous podcast, or if you've got any suggestions for future books, you can send me an email, luke@juggler.net. Also, you can send me recommendations and follow along with what reading I'm doing on goodreads.com/Luke Burridge is where you can check out there. Become my friend. Follow my reviews there. Also, you can follow me on Twitter, which I'm @LukeBurridge at Twitter, or Luke Burridge. No, twitter.com/LukeBurridge. Or you can read everything what I'm doing on my blog, which is lukeburridge.com/blog, and keep up with all the news. Also, check out my video, my International Juggler 2009 video. I'll put it up here in the podcast feed, not in the podcast feed, in the show notes for this episode, or you can find it on my website or just on YouTube. Check out International Juggler 2009 on YouTube, on my account there as well. Anyway, thanks for listening, and I'll catch you later.